When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV and our coverage of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, streaming exclusively on Disney Plus. I think it's exclusively. I just made that up. This is episode 4, I Plunged to My Death, and very short one. We briefly talked about it off pod, but I'm sure we'll maybe get into it more as we talk about this episode. But just Bingetown housekeeping, I guess, before we get into the actual fun stuff, is just that if you found us on the Percy Jackson specific feed, so Percy Jackson the Olympians, a Bingetown TV podcast, this is just a heads up that Bingetown TV is more than just Percy Jackson. We cover a lot of TV shows. We have covered a lot of TV shows as well. Currently doing, what, Reacher Season 2. We have Jujutsu Kaisen just wrapped up, Yu Yu Hakusho on Netflix. We have much more coming down the pike in 2024. We've been doing this for like three-ish years now, more potentially. I guess we're coming in on 4, so it's 3.5 years. So we just have a bunch of content out there. If you're interested and you like us, it's not just the two of us. There's 7 of us, so there's 5 additional voices that you can hear and fall in love with. Easiest place to get all of our content, bingetowntv.com. Okay. Percy Jackson, episode 4. Luke, your turn to talk.
Okay. So this is the halfway point, if I'm not wrong about that. And I just think that it's crazy in 2024. Wow, I almost said 2023. In 2024, when it takes almost 2 years to make a show, especially high quality CGI driven streaming shows like this, and they put out a 30-minute episode. I really think that is a turnoff, and I'm starting to feel the effects of this shortened runtime, because we brought this up on episode 1. Episode 1 itself was very short as well. That was like 35 minutes. I'm starting to feel pacing issues. I don't know if you are as well, and this is our first time really talking about this, so tell me if like you even caught any wind of like what I'm talking about now. But I think what's happening is that they're starting to hit like this cyclical pattern that's very predictable of just CGI is carrying huge parts of these episodes, and then like a very obvious from an audience perspective problem pops up. They take a second to figure it out, and then Percy or Annabeth or Grover kills the monster, and it feels like we've rinsed and repeated this 4 times, and now we're getting to the point where I want more from the story besides incredible CGI, and I do mean incredible CGI. I'm still all on board that the Chimera looked amazing and all that. But now it just feels like, I don't know, I feel like I didn't learn much this episode, and I really felt the 33 minutes. I want more breathing time for the prophecy conversations and like that voice that keeps him infiltrating Percy's dream and even God's. Like, we're just kind of getting these monsters along the way. And the thing that's both frustrating me, and they had a good nod to it in this episode where Percy kind of meta acknowledged something that was so obviously out of place, but then they go ahead and 5 minutes later and they just like let the mother of monsters walk up without like even like suspicion. So I don't know. It's still great. Like, I'm still at least at a solid 7 or 8 out of 10, but my excitement that was really carrying me through the first 3 episodes is starting to be like, I don't know how like characterize these like Percy, Annabeth, and Grover are. And like, I really want more from the world building side than just cool monsters, Percy overcomes a problem. But this was the shortest episode, so this was going to be the easiest one to pick apart. And we are gearing up for the sprint into the finale of book 1, season 1. And I know a lot of the best parts of the season are yet to come. But right now, I would say like episode 4 got me the least excited to talk about this show out of any of them. And it could be fatigue from what I've been mentioning. But where are you at with everything I just kind of mentioned there?
Yeah, I think when you try to compare it to the other 3 episodes, I feel like each one felt like it grabbed me more. Mm-hmm. I was much more interested in the conflict and everything that was happening. I mean, just thinking about episode 1, like you brought it up in terms of runtime. I mean, I feel like people had pacing issues with almost the opposite, where like it's moving too fast. And it was like bang, bang. And it was like emotional and it was heavy, mm-hmm. and the action was cool. And yeah, I don't know. I guess here, it just is kind of, I don't know, we're kind of moving from things and, like you're saying, not letting them completely breathe. It's kind of tough because I feel like I see how the ending of this episode is a natural endpoint to an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, what can we do to fill in like the extra, I guess the quote unquote extra space that we think there could be? Because like you said, it's only 30 minutes. Usually get an episode season, it's like, you know, you get hour episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's reflected in like the cost of it. I don't know how much this show costs to make. It's kind of crazy to look at, like, if you look at per episode figures, and if it's like in like the 8-ish million range and it's only producing 30 minutes of content, is pretty mm-hmm. crazy to think about. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel like I don't want to say I just got through this episode, but this episode feels like it just kind of happened. I like the introduction of like the temples thing.
Yep, and definitely. That's what I want more of.
Yeah, we get a Greek little bit more world information. Building. Yeah, and Percy, I think, is more like explicit about his. Or rather, his beliefs about the gods are growing into more like an articulate manner versus yeah. like him just kind of being like a general frustration. Like he's putting words to frustration, and that's working. And we got good background, I thought, on the searchers with the satyrs and like his uncle Ferdinand, and that stuff's cool. But mm-hmm. yeah, it just kind of, I don't know. This episode does feel like it just happened.
If you're going to do this monster of the week thing every week, like let them have their own unique portrayals. Like Medusa was getting there, but we didn't get nearly enough time with her and they just kind of cut her. The Minotaur, same thing. Like that was a really sick looking Minotaur. That one I can forgive. That's the first monster that we ever mm-hmm. really see. But then the Chimera, it's like, this is just a copy and paste of the Furies. Like I don't feel like there's anything differentiating these surface level monsters. That's why I'm saying it's not really justified having these small run times, because we could be fleshing these guys out, making us care a little bit more, having the monsters give us more world building that I'm craving. But I think we're going to get there, especially when we start seeing more gods. Like that's the point. We're still in the setup phase, but I'm starting to feel the setup phase like fatigue.
Yeah, it's tough too, because this felt like an episode where I was really noticing my lack of book knowledge carryover from when I was a young man, because mm-hmm. obviously I know like they're gonna go to St. Louis, they're gonna go to the arch is, you know, the Athena's temple disguise type thing. I know that mm-hmm. he was gonna fall and the water catches him, all that kind of stuff. But when I was thinking, especially when you were just asking too, of how this episode could have been longer, and I guess I just like don't really know for sure beyond what you're saying, yeah, of like filling in these gaps of world building and maybe letting moments breathe. I don't really, yeah, I don't know. Maybe adding additional parts to the chase. Like, did we have to cut right to the arch? You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not just
and
not really sure.
This character, God, forgive my pronunciation.
Yeah, I'm looking at the spelling of
Agneta?
It. Agneta?
Like, Agneta?
That's definitely how it's spelled, but.
Yeah. She's such a cool concept, and I was like going down the rabbit hole a little bit, and like she is the mother of monsters in a lot of iterations. Like she is supposed to be, not in every single form of Greek mythology, but I believe she's supposed to be the mother of like the Sphinx, the Cerberus, Hydras, even Gorgons, who that's what Medusa is like in some cases. So that seems like such an epic and important title in this world, and I wouldn't be surprised if we don't ever see her again. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Did you, when you looked, who are her parents? Do you know?
Oh, I think I might actually still have it up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to like put you on the spot necessarily, but I was just curious. Only because I really liked that line where she was like you're a great grandmother's my grandmother. This has always been a family story. I think that perspective is just interesting to be reminded of when you're thinking of it, because they're all like related in some very long, convoluted way, which is just funny.
It's different. It seems yeah. like in different iterations, like sometimes she is the daughter of the god of River Styx, Ocean. Okay. I don't know. I can't even pronounce that. So yeah, like it seems like it's not always super consistent. She seems like more of a flex character. You can kind of have your own spin. Sometimes she's the direct daughter of Gaia and like, Tartarus, like embodied. I don't know. So it doesn't seem like super consistent, but it's a really cool idea. Like the mother, what births some of the most important Greek mythology characters. And I just feel like it was like a check that they just hit, and now we're moving on.
That's a good point. Yeah. I thought the Chimera was well done, but again, it's mm-hmm. probably going to be a thing. That'll be the first and only time we see it.
Yeah, and probably. And yeah, it's fine. Like I just feel like if this happens again in episode 5, my tone's going to start turning even more negative, and I don't want it to come off like that because I'm still really enjoying the show. And
gotta get to the casino.
The reason this part's important for this specific podcast because there's not a lot of content for this episode. So just getting opinions and giving us a chance to kind of expand on the halfway point. That's what I'm really doing here. I don't really mean to see like I'm nitpicking just because like I'm still kind of absorbing and deciding for myself, like, is this in hindsight going to be fine? Like, this was just a step along the way to get to the end of season one, or is this going to be the template for what we get for the rest of the season? And then it starts to be like, okay, this really, maybe this show isn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I think I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to word the way that I'm also feeling. I will say, I mean, the beginning of this episode I thought was really good. I just enjoy the Annabeth and Percy character moments. They have a really nice conversation after Percy comes out of that dream where he kind of has the memories in the pool with his mom. They have the dream where we get the she's coming, which ends up obviously being this mother of monsters. And I don't mean to start like this as in we're going to go through scene by scene, but I just want to talk about the conversation they have in the train car. Mm-hmm. And just because I brought it up a little earlier, Percy is just, you know, really verbalizing his thoughts about what he's learning about the gods and how they do things. And he's just basically of the opinion, like, it doesn't really make any sense why I have to make like an offering or do feats for attention, because people who are close to you aren't supposed to treat you that way. And Annabeth has a maybe the exact opposite perception of that. We get more information about her backstory, which I think is just good for her and Percy's characters kind of coming together and understanding each other more.
Yeah, it's like a clash of the old ways and somebody that is just being thrown into this world. So it is good to see, because Walker crushes all of those conversations.
Yes,
and I did take a bunch of notes on any time he does have like some of those moments. So we'll hit those. But yeah, I agree. I really like the character work they were trying to do right in the beginning, but wish it was a little bit more, but like more screen time.
Yeah, just was something that I had kind of forgotten from both, I guess, knowledge of Greek mythology and the story itself. But Annabeth's father and Athena never actually banged. She just is born out of her own thoughts, which is just an interesting, funny concept to think about.
That's how Athena was born, right?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So there you go. And that's just funny. I'm just trying to think, like, I'm sure there wasn't a conversation beforehand knowing the way that the gods seem to operate, but it's just funny to think, like, he ran into Athena and then just, like, Athena was like, okay, now you're a single dad. Yeah. It's just like, okay, thank you. Like, on one hand, yeah, this is like an amazing gift, but on the other hand, it's like, I didn't really ask for this. So, okay. Like, I maybe, you know, we start with like an Apple Watch or something, and then we move on to like this life that I need to care for. But that's,
do we know who's cast as Athena?
No, I mean, I do not.
Okay, because I have been avoiding looking up things because I know there's like hide in plain sight plot points that'll be fun if we don't know.
Yeah.
It might be obvious at points, but I'm very curious to see who is cast as Athena, because that's a really hard god to portray, just like the mother of wisdom and Annabeth's mom. Like, this, it's going to be a big character.
Yeah, I only know that Edge is playing Ares, I think. I think that's the only one I know.
It's so great.
I was never going to forget that one once
of course
I read
not.
It. All right, so I guess trying to keep us more high level moving through things, and then we'll pick out little parts that we like. We're on the train now, kind of the next day. We have a nice kind of conversation, maybe not a nice conversation, but we have an additional conversation of this world building stuff. We see the kind of centaurs out the window. We learn that the god Pan has disappeared and the balance of nature is being unbalanced, for lack of a better term, because of humans and all that kind of stuff. And we have the satyrs, who we know have this really big connection to nature, are trying to search for Pan. And then we just immediately start to get into our conflict, which is the mother of monsters, is what I'm going to call her, because I'm just hesitant to even pronounce the name. But she kind of gets involved with the police. And I thought it was funny because, like you said, there's the meta moment where he's like, okay, like, we're just kind of waiting for the police officer to turn into a monster. And then we get busy and they kind of flip it on the head. But up until this point, I'm like, okay, like, I'm still kind of into the formula. And then afterwards, I think I'm feeling how you were feeling of like, okay, rinse repeated.
It's just weird, like the tension, but maybe it is like the atmosphere that they build with the monsters that have intelligence. And I'm pointing that out, meaning like not minotaurs, like things that have intelligence, like Electo did the Fury. And then like the mother of monsters, they just feel like the same character, don't they? Like the way they talk, the way they act, it just feels like they're like looking at you And I get, I wrote down like it was a great line by Percy sussing out, are the police evil? Like they're just going to turn into something. Right. But then this person walks up and nobody does anything for like a little bit. I don't know. At that point, I'm just like, you should just, anytime anybody interacts with you, it's evil. Like we're fucking fighting, whatever.
Yeah,
that
let's
is.
Get
like,
rid
just
of
don't
him
talk
out.
To
let's
me.
Get it popping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she rolls up with like her bag that has like the hidden Chimera in there, which was cool. You know, we knew it was going the second that she walks up to them.
Yeah. And I mean, it is, again, like I'm saying, I don't remember word for word from the books, but it is pretty much like you're saying, it's the copy and paste of what happened on the bus with Electo.
Yeah, exactly.
They're on a form of transportation. She's also on the form of transportation. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation where she builds up to the fact that she's evil. I see.
Here's a more interesting talking point is, did she clarify who sent her? Or is she simply just looking for the master bolt through Percy, just like everybody is? Because the reason I bring that up is because the Furies were very explicitly set, told to us as being agents of Hades. I don't know if she's connected to Hades. It would almost be more interesting if she was not, because then she's like her own little entity, like doing her own thing, just like Medusa kind of was, where she has her own agenda. I like that rather than there just be underling after underling just to say that they put in Greek mythology.
Yeah, that's why I asked if you had read who her parents were. She does kind of say, like, you're kind of paying for your parents' mistakes in this sense, but that's, I think, still too vague to maybe suss out an exact reasoning.
Yeah.
That could still mean the Master Bolt quest.
Yeah, she could be for anybody. I don't know, but I do love the random accolade that they gave her as, like, the demigod killer. So cool. I just take that as most demigods in like modern time have died in one way or another, indirectly from either her or some of her children, like the monsters. Yeah. Exactly. Which is like a really cool idea that puts a little bit more weight than just a random fury that gets taken out by an Annabeth knife. So in that line of thinking, there's a chance that she is there, if not in the next episode, like as a reoccurring person later down the line, which I would like. That would justify of having done this and making it not super unique, because she's going to be a reoccurring character. I don't know if she will be. This is just total guesses, because like you, I kind of forget her importance in this, especially for book one or season one.
It still is, though, like you're saying, with the Electo comparison in a way, like she just kind of does the slow walk, and it's kind of tough maybe to show us. It's not like we have like an expendable demigod on hand.
Right.
For her to demonstrate with. And even with Electo, like we know that Electo was involved in Talia's transformation, I guess, let's say, not death. But even that's still like a telling us versus showing us. So they don't really feel like they have the weight as much as they could. So I agree with that. Although one thing I loved about this is the mist version of the Chimera is the little dog.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
Ooh, and then the mist like of... kind of felt like the Hogwarts Express, that when they were sitting out there just looking outside, the mist covering all the centaurs, that led to that pan conversation, which I thought was cool, because it puts some effort forward to explain why in modern day there's less Greek mythology, even through the mist. Like, that's just cool. That's natural of what, like, compared to the ancient world of like when Greek mythology was running rampant and stuff. So it's cool that they put that in there. That might come back. I don't really know, but it seems like Pan's very connected to Grover and Satyrs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This might not be the best way to say it, but almost like throw in Grover's character and storyline a bone. Or like, oh, there's also this part of it. Only thing we really get from him this episode is that he's grumpy when he doesn't get enough sleep. And that's kind of it. True. So I guess it's just a way to maybe build him out a little bit more.
So he doesn't really have much in this episode after that, does he?
No.
It's more Annabeth and Percy having like their one-on-one conversations. But I mean, I could take
the arch. And then it's, unless you want to talk about anything else before that.
No, I mean, it's just like the chase starts and they decide real quick they need to jump off the train, and they end up in St. Louis where the arch is. And we then go on to find out that Athena's temple is hidden in plain sight, and she honors like perfection and mathematics and like beauty in that way. So it just makes sense that this arch is going to be a temple where they're going to attempt to ask for her help, Athena's help. Yeah. Never really works out for demigods, but we'll see what happens here is like the whole mindset. And they go in, and one of my favorite things is how the temple of a god is protected against evil or just monsters in general without their blessing. And that's what we have here, right? Like, we have the protection. It's all good. Everything's fine. But we didn't mention, too, that Percy did get poked with the poison, and then that kicks in. So all this causes them to leave the safety, and then they see the mother of monsters coming. I thought it was going to work. I was like, hey, this is water. This is healing. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Percy and Annabeth are driving the character development in the show so far. They have another good conversation here where Percy admits that, maybe not admits outwardly, but it seems like there's a little bit of a jealousy aspect here a little bit when he says your thing with your mom is different and it works. Like, I don't want anything from my dad type of deal. And she has a little cheeky line where she's like, oh, like, you're almost calling me a friend, because he admits, like, you've honestly done more for me than my dad ever has, which gets flipped on his head, obviously, at the end. And I'm sure we'll move into this perspective of Percy has kind of been somewhat, not necessarily oblivious of the ways that his dad has been helping, but it might become more outward of his relationship with his dad, which is obviously a very good progression for his character.
And then the seeds are getting planted too for Annabeth having a crush on Percy, or vice versa. Like, it just seems like they're starting to connect a little bit. And Annabeth is a hard person to, you know, get close to. And they even went and said that earlier where like, Luke accepted her right away, but Talia didn't. Like, she needed to get more acclimated with her. And Annabeth is a little bit cold, but by design, that's just her type of personality. And like, in this type of world, you can't really be trusting, but you could see the cracks there with her and Percy specifically, not so much as Grover, because I think he was dealing with the tickets at this point, but you're starting to see it. You're starting to see the relationship build.
Yeah, I forgot that he just is off doing that while they have this conversation.
Well, he was pissed because he gets so mad anytime he sees like hunting or anything like to do with animals. And he saw that in the temple, like the human museum part of the temple. So I get it. That's gotta be a huge part of his character if you're gonna drop Pan and like the Seder connection and the dryad from like episode 2. Like, all that stuff has to be important to his character, otherwise we don't really have anything to talk about for Grover.
A big linchpin of the conflict here, maybe a catalyst is potentially the better word, is the end of last episode, which we laughed about. I still think it's funny that Percy sends the head to Mount Olympus. We have Hermes in the end of last episode deliver it, and it comes right back, which I think is good. We get the immediate impact of that decision, and turns out Annabeth and Grover were probably right in that it was not the best idea, because we essentially learn here that Athena is pissed at Annabeth, and her impertinence has wounded her mother's pride, so she's being punished at this point by Athena allowing the Mother of Monsters and the Chimera to come into the sanctuary in the temple. And the option for them is to go up. And they got in that little elevator, and I was like, I would be freaking the fuck out if I was in that elevator. Even outside of the fact that this monster is chasing me, like, just being that cramped and going up to the top of the arch, me personally, I would be sweating bullets.
I thought you would be saying the same thing about once you're at the top, you're in that little also hallway. That, like, that is just, that creeps me out. It's like, everybody jump, 1, 2, 3, jump and see what happens. But no,
I'm not good enough at math to, I think, trust the math.
That's perfect, though. Otherwise, Athena wouldn't accept it.
I don't know.
But last thing I'll say before we can just move on to that whole climax at the top, that is like a very evil thing and spiteful thing for Athena to do, is just to lift up the protection for her daughter to get a little slap on the wrist, when chances are the demigod killer is going to murder all three of these. Like, I'm sitting there like, holy shit. Like, because eventually Annabeth hopefully gets to talk to Athena. It's like, this has got to be the first thing you bring up. Like, what the hell was that shit? Like, you're going to let me die just because, you know, Percy sent you guys something? I don't know. But I really enjoy the repercussions of the Medusa head happening right away. I wonder if that's it. Like, are we ever going to have Medusa mentioned again? Or is her head ever going to come back into play in a relevant way? Or was it just like all vehicle to get to this point? And either way, it's fine. I love Medusa as a concept, and I just felt like she left too early. So I would enjoy somehow them bringing it back, but it seems like maybe the payoff's already here.
Yeah. I think anything additional storytelling wise is probably just gravy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But that's fine. I mean, it's the start of, I think, you know, the gods being acclimated, I guess you could say, or introduced to Percy's personality. Because he is a little motherfucker.
Just enters the scene. Yeah, this is him being placed on the board, and now they know. Now they know what's up.
For sure. Yeah. And the Chimera was about to fucking take him right off the board, essentially, because he tries here. He tries to pull the heroic, I guess he technically does pull the heroic move, where he forces Annabeth
And I loved it.
Yeah, he forces Annabeth and Grover outside of the kind of emergency door. He, in his head, he's like, I'm literally going to die anyway. So there's literally no point in you guys dying. Tries to go toe-to-toe with the Chimera. Does not work in the same way that he went toe-to-toe with Clarice in episode two. And dude, I thought the way they shot it was perfect in the POV of like falling. And I thought that was a really smart, I guess, cinematography choice, if that's the right term to use.
My biggest shock was the second they're going to split up and Annabeth's going to sacrifice herself and Percy goes to offer her the pen sword. I was like, what?
Yeah.
No fucking way. And then I was like, dude, this smooth criminal, because that was so nice. Like the way he just like flips her around and locks the door. And then, yeah, like the Chimera, like that lion looking colorful reptile face. Yeah, was like just the cobra head
slowly came out. Yeah, that looked cool as hell.
And it has, we saw the tail earlier. It didn't use it much here, but that's like an iconic part of the Chimera that was shooting out of the bag, which was cool. She's just overpowered as fuck, though. Like she just goes like that, snaps, and like a hole blows up in the middle of the of the arch. I mean, not to play Paul nitpick level, but like, why did she just do that right under his feet? Just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, the Chimera totally would have burned him alive. Just like,
oh, yeah, when he was flipping.
It stopped with it. Yeah, with a human width from the other edge. It's just
maybe
funny.
he oozes tension. Water energy from Poseidon and just blocked it. I'm taking that cannon, headcanon.
So, what we don't need to headcanon is how he survives, which we anticipated because we've read the books, but the, I guess you could say, tornado of water comes out of the Mississippi River.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Wouldn't it be the, oh God, I don't want to sound so dumb, but is it not the Missouri, right?
St. Louis is in Missouri for sure.
Isn't there a Missouri River? And now I just feel like I'm an idiot.
There's totally a Missouri River. That's totally a thing. So let me
chances are, see what
one of the M's. It's one of them M's. It is the Mississippi River.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because the Gateway Arch is across the Mississippi River from the DraftKings Queens Casino.
Nice. So yeah, I mean, I'll talk about that scene too because I thought it was well shot, like him falling. You saw it from his perspective. That was like, that was pretty cool to see. And I was pretty hyped when he's upside down, gets saved. And then he starts talking to the water nymph or the sea nymph. They're called Nereids. Oh, God. I don't know about that one, too. But that's just the theme of this podcast. So we don't know how to pronounce shit because Poseidon still isn't like directly involved, but he's still not at the point where he's going to like appear in front of Percy and talk to him. So he's using some of his underlings to help save his son here. And that's what happens. And we finally get an upgrade here and he can now breathe underwater, which that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's a nice closed loop from the start where we have the flashback memory of him in the pool with his mom. And she apparently has always told him just breathe. He flips on her there and then Poseidon, that tricky bastard, pulls it here. So that was a nice closed loop for this episode for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
script wise, that's well done.
The kid I thought looked like Walker too.
Yeah,
the younger kid. Well, that was a good person. Good. Yeah,
he's good. Still, he has that little cheeky nature still. It's kind of funny. Wonder how that audition.
Good
went.
To see Percy's mom as well.
Yes. Yeah. Sally Jackson. Shout out to Sally Jackson. So
how the fuck have we done the episode already?
That was insane. That's how it worked.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we're just halfway through the season, I guess last thing we'll do before we kind of sign off, I want two things for you, and this is going to be hard to put you on the spot. Just as a whole, the first half of the season, first four episodes, gut reaction of 1 to 10, where you're at. And then also if you can remember the ordering of how you would rank the four episodes.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I think, 7 seems reasonable. If we're going to use like the full 1 to 10, I think 7 feels reasonable. I think it's a little bit above average. I think that's part of that is built totally off of my personal bias and interest in the series itself. But also I think, you know, Walker's really good at the acting. The CGI is, you know, is fantastic. There's been some great moments. So I think 7 is good. I think there's room for it to increase. But like you said, I think there's also obviously room for it to decrease. Mm-hmm. I think episode wise, I want to say that I ranked them in the order they came out. I think it goes 1, 2, 3, 4 for me.
Okay. So we're pretty similar.
Best
for both.
To least favorite.
Yeah. We're very similar in both. I'm surprised. I thought you would have The only, in terms of ranking the episodes, I have 2 and 1 switched. I liked the Camp Half-Blood stuff a little bit more than like the quicker intro setup, but we did that in one podcast. It really felt more of like a part 1, part 2 for us, at least.
Great point,
so I feel like I agree on the ranking of the episodes, but I was going back and forth with Meryl on Discord, and she also agrees that episode 4 is probably the weakest, and it's because of the repetitiveness. I don't think it's like a bad episode in a vacuum. I think it's more about what we were saying at the top. So I'm fine with all that. Still very hype. And I'm also sitting at a 7 out of 10, which I feel guilty saying, but that's still a good TV. It maybe not be, it's not Game of Thrones. It's not dark.
It's tough. Yeah.
But it's not bad. Like, it's 7 out of 10. That's like where we're at with like Yellowjacket, some of my other favorite things we've watched recently. Mm-hmm. I just had expectations where this was potentially going to be a 9 out of 10. And right now we're looking like we're going to hit like a 7 out of 10.
It's also tough in that 7 out of 10 is not like, if you're using the whole 1 to 10, that's very good.
Yeah, I agree.
If 5 is average, you know, 7 is, that's good. So, and there's room to grow. We got half a season left. And like you said earlier in this episode, we know that most of the best parts of this story are still yet to come in this season. So that'll be the true judge.
Jesus. Oh, the last 2 episodes are going to be so good. I just am so confident that the last 2 are going to be great. And then we're going to see the Edge at some point. That's going to be like,
it's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be great. Okay. And we'll be here for it. 1 episode per episode. You know, it's funny. Just realized today they come out on Tuesdays and not Wednesdays. I thought they came out on Wednesdays.
No.
On Tuesdays.
Yeah, Christmas threw us off a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the first drop. That's what kind
of... Still getting the groove of 2024. So that's going to wrap up episode 4 of season 1 of Percy Jackson and the Olympian, streaming exclusively on Disney+. Like I literally just said, we'll be back, I guess, next week with episode 5, whatever they decide to call that. I haven't looked it up. And yeah, we're just going to keep rolling on in this season. We're covering some other shows. Like I mentioned, it feels weird to say it again because it was maybe 25 minutes ago, but we just finished JJK. We're doing Reacher on Amazon. We are doing Yu Hakusho on Netflix. Do you know anything else that's coming up? Not to just put you on the spot, but...
Invincible season 2 part 2 should be coming. I don't know specifically when, but I know that's early 2024.
True
That'll
Detective's
be
coming out soon, I think. True Detective. Early 2024. So we got things on the horizon. So you're going to stick around for Percy Jackson, and then we're not going to dump you into a wasteland like a neglectful godparent. We're going to nurture you into another Bingetown TV show. So once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.